Good evening, one and all. Yes, we're coming up towards the end of November, Thanksgiving in a couple of days' time here in America. And, of course, everybody's now sort of thinks, oh, crikey, let's better start getting ready for Christmas and everything like that. And it's getting, I was just talking to my guest, it's getting a little nippy here now in Connecticut where I am and Washington where he is. And as I was just saying, I was just checking back in London and that, and it's a little bit nippy there as well. But I guess for the time of year, this is, we can't complain. I think we've been a bit spoiled. I think this is what's happened. Everybody's sort of, we've got some sort of nice weather in November that you don't normally expect. But that's it. I am here, and so is my guest. Now, what can I say about my guest? He was a lawyer, a former member of the U.S. Foreign Service, playwright, and according to our friend Steve Bagley, Steve Berry, of course, yeah, we have every year on our show, one of the best new thriller writers around. Well, it could be that his previous stuff lined him up for writing thriller stories, because he's, after all, and we'll get to this, he's in the Russian I Spy book of CIA members or something like that. So we'll get him in. He's laughing at that. We'll get him in. I better introduce him, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Otho Eskin. Hi, Otho. So that was right, was it? That was right. You were in the Russian I Spy book of CIA members. Is that right?
That's right. Yes, I was. That's an honor I could have skipped, frankly, but
I mean,
good to meet you, Barry.
It's good to talk
to you. I always like to talk to fellow writers.
Well, there you go. And the thing is, as I said during that, your early work, you know, with the American Embassy and, you know, in law and delegations for all sorts of things, the undersea laws and all that sort of thing that you did, plus all the places you went to and everything. And you were in these places like, you know, Russia, Germany, etc., like that, with the Iron Curtain was going on and everything like that.
Right.
And so you had it, well, basically, you're speaking first-hand knowledge when you start writing your books.
Well, up to an extent. Now,
right.
A lot of the story is made up in my, I just invented, but the background and the people and the places that I place the events, they're all true to life, and I really try to make them as true as I can.
Right, indeed. And as we said, you know, you were in this who's who of the CIA, which is translated into lots of different languages and sort of different. I mean, yeah, did they have you, had you marked down as a spy then, Otho?
Well, that's what they said. I was a spy or a collaborator, or me and a whole bunch of other people. It was a disinformation program set up by the Russian KGB, I'm pretty sure, and it didn't really work. I don't think anybody cared what I was, but it was an attempt to discredit me and people like me who were just simple Foreign Service officers doing a job, not doing espionage at all. But they made the attempt to paint me as a spy, so that people wouldn't talk to me.
Right. As I said at the beginning, you actually sort of come into non-fiction a bit late, because your first stuff was on the, you're doing plays, writing plays.
Absolutely, yes. Well, after I retired from the Foreign Service, I decided I needed some new career. I wasn't going to sit on my hands. And one of the first things I did is I started writing plays. I've always been very fond of plays and theater, and I thought I would try my hand at it. And I wrote a number of plays, some of which were produced, and some of which were quite successful. I had them done here in Washington and in New York and in Australia, of all places.
Wow.
And in several places in Eastern Europe, including Russia. They didn't hold it against me in Russia.
They just wanted to keep an eye on you. I mean, that's what it
was. Well, yes. Well, it was after the fall of the Kremlin.
Right.
So they were going on. And you know how it is among writers and artists. They don't care about politics very much. So they let me in.
Right.
I produced my play.
So what finally pushed you to, you know, to write the first of what is, you know, your second one's just come out, but the first of an ongoing series in this? What pushed you into writing that?
Well, I just, I guess I'm just hopelessly restive and impatient. So I try something, and then I sort of to figure, well, I want to do something different. So after having done 4, 5, 6 plays, I thought, well, I'd like to try a novel form and fiction. And then I decided I didn't want to do any heavy-duty stuff. I wanted something light, something entertaining that people would enjoy. So I went to the thriller mode, and I find I'm quite comfortable in it. And I place it here in the events, all here in Washington, for the most part, here in Washington, a city I know very well. I lived here almost all my life, which is a lot longer than than I care to remember.
Exactly, I know the feeling, right?
I'm still hanging in there. I plan to be around for quite a long time.
Right.
I know the city very well, both as a physical place, but also as a place to work. I was in the State Department for over 20 years, and I dealt with many, many agencies in the government, and I kind of have a feeling of how they relate, where they get competition, where they get jealousy. They're struggling for all, every agency is struggling to get their budget
right
up, and that means somebody else has to lose. So it's very competitive in a mostly good natured sort
right
of way, but there are everybody, each agency is out for their own objective,
right,
and mainly that's power. That means money, that means access to the president, that kind of thing.
Right.
I feel very comfortable writing about that because I saw all of that firsthand.
Right, indeed. So, as I said, you're literally speaking as an expert on this this side of
well,
it, if you like, up to a point,
right. I think so, yes. I like to think so. I mean, obviously, the details in my novels are made up. I mean, I have a lot of shooting and violence taking place. I must say, personally, I've never experienced that kind of violence. I hope never to. This is can be a violent city, though. There was a lot of crime going on for many years, and it's still in parts of the city, very dangerous city because of mainly because of gang warfare and drug dealings.
Okay.
But I'm not part of that. That's not my world.
Right.
I'm the world of bureaucrats and lawyers.
Well, and in fact, in your first book, which was The Reflecting Paul, we are introduced to Marco Zorn, who is a Washington, as you said, based in Washington, where you know, homicide detective, strong ethical compass, but refuses to play by the rules.
So, that's right. He makes up his own. Well, he makes rules. It's just the ones he makes up.
Yeah.
He doesn't really care for the rules, but particularly the bureaucratic rules that the senior officials impose on him. So he tends to ignore those. But he's a very decent, honest guy. He doesn't break the rules just for his own benefit. He does it in order to carry out his job as a homicide detective.
Right, indeed. And as I said at the beginning, Steve Berry, who's been on it, comes on our show every year for the last 8 or 9 years he's come on now, I think. He said, rough and ragged as the world is so vividly creates, the reflecting pool crackles with twists and turns, making for a fun and heady combination of suspense and intrigue. Now, that's not bad, is it?
That's not bad at all. No, I couldn't improve on that at all.
Right. So, when you started off and you got Marco came along as your character, and I'm a great believer in the characters talk to you and lead you down the paths and everything like that. Did you think, okay, this is going okay, I can get a series out of this, or did you just think, oh, this is going to be a one-off sort of thing? How did it go?
Well, it's complicated because, you know, as a writer, these things aren't simple, but I knew I wanted to have the main character a detective, because that justifies him getting involved in all kinds of crimes and conspiracies to commit crime. If he's just a private guy, it's a little unbelievable that he would be getting to know these criminals or dealing with them. So I knew he had to be a cop, but I wanted him to be a different cop. I didn't want him, for one thing, he doesn't like guns. He has personal reasons for not liking guns. He never carries a gun if he can help it. So that was one feature that was sort of central to his character. He tries to deal with dangerous situations, which he faces constantly, by being smarter and cooler and more intuitively clever than the opponents. And so far, at least, he's always won. His cleverness pays out, and he can his opponents, of which there are quite a many, and some of whom are very dangerous indeed, are all defeated in the end, not because he shoots them, but because he's smarter than they are.
Right. Indeed, and it went very well. For a debut book, it was selected as the Amazon editor's pick of the best mystery thriller and suspense.
That's great.
You get that? That's a great start. But now you've brought out the second book in the series, and this is called Headshot. And we get, Marco's, well, you bring in your theatrical experience, I guess, here, because an actress gets murdered, doesn't she?
Well, actually, in the Headshot, I draw on two of my experiences. First one, as you say, is theater. I not only wrote plays, but I was very much engaged in the production of plays backstage, during the rehearsals and leading up to the opening night. So I know that world well. The other world is the world of diplomacy, the world of dealing with ambassadors and embassies and officials in the State Department. And so I tried to intertwine those two worlds, which are really quite different, but both of which I knew intimately well. And so that's why I started off with the theater, in which a famous actress is murdered. It turns out she was the love of Marco Zorn, my main character, is when he was younger, when they were both younger. And he is determined to find her killer, which he in the end does indeed. And in the meantime, he has been given the assignment of protecting the prime minister of a foreign country.
Oh, okay.
Visiting Washington, and who is under threat by an international assassin, and so he has to bodyguard her while he is also investigating the murder of this actress. So it's a complicated, intertwined plot.
Right.
I hope it's not too confusing. But
No. I mean, this is great because there's all sorts of twists and turns and alleyways and everything. As you got with all the different plots. Does Marco Zorn have a partner, or is that something coming in, or what's happening there?
No. Well, he has a home. He has a nice home, nothing special about it. A nice part of town, but it's nothing special about his home. He lives alone.
Mm-hmm.
He's had many affairs in the past, but there's no current enamorata, as they used to say.
Right.
He has many passions, one of which is classic sports cars.
Oh.
He drives and motorcycles, and he has a very great interest in really good clothes, which he buys incidentally from London, he has a lot of interests that have nothing to do with his crime investigations. They're just part of his character, and they are his character is bit by bit revealed in the first and the second book, and I am hoping in later books you'll learn more and more about him as to why he does what he does, and where he really comes from emotionally and psychologically. But what I didn't want to do is, as some writers do, is have my main character, a policeman, a depressed person or an ex-alcoholic or
right.
an alcoholic,
right.
Somebody who is either having divorced from his wife or not speaking to his children. Marco Zorn is quite different. He's actually very cheerful, good-natured, and happy character. And I thought that was kind of contrasted so many of the.
Indeed it is. In Headshot, he's got a sidekick. Was it Lucy? Yes.
Lucy, that's right.
Yeah.
She's a Japanese-American police officer who's his junior partner.
Okay. Now, one of the things is, you know, as you said, he's got this, he's got the murder, he's got the sort of diplomat thing and stuff, but he ends up going to all sorts of twists and turns with prisoners and mafia and curse and everything. I mean, you know, it's not just straightforward for the poor bloke, is it? I mean...
he gets into a great deal of trouble, but he's determined to solve these problems. And at one point, he needs to meet the man who actually saw the face of the assassin who's after the prime minister. And he's the only person alive who's seen that man's face. So, the witness that he looked for is in a maximum security federal prison in Colorado.
Oh.
And so he manages to get into the prison through guile and talk to the prisoner, who will never get out. He's in for life because he killed some mafia figures. But Marco Zorn learns enough to track down and eventually achieve his aims in finding and defeating the assassin.
Obviously, the second book in a series, and you know, the character seems to be early developing, and it's, as you say, there's a lot more to find out about.
He's a complicated guy.
Yeah, it sounds it, which is great, because people, I can see people sitting there trying to work out this and work out that. Do you sort of plan the next book already? You know, do you sort of, when you're writing one, do you think, well, I can bring this into the next one?
To be honest, I've actually written the next book with Marco Zorn, so I reveal a little bit more each time.
Good.
It's a totally different plot, some of the same characters are carried over, and they're in many brand new ones. Then this one, he's facing Big Pharma, which is producing a drug which is highly toxic and dangerous. And so one of the things that Marco Zorn wants to do is to stop the sale of these drugs, which is killing people on the street. These are street drugs, and he figures out a way of doing that, but I don't want to do this spoiler and say how he does it.
Right, indeed. One of the things when we get people on the show, it might be, I'm just guessing if it's the same from coming from the theatrical side of things, is a lot of people, they think that once they've read, once they've written the book and the book's there in their hand, that's when the hard work, you've done the hard work. I say, no, that's when the hard work starts. Did you find that?
Yes, I found that very much. Writing comes very easily to me. I can write for hours. Well, after a while, I get exhausted. But I can write for many hours a day, and I have more ideas than I can possibly use. In fact, I have to type so fast that I make spelling and mistakes and things like that, because it's just flowing out of me. But
right.
Once it's done, and then the next step, as you say, the hard part starts. That's hard. As I'm sure you know.
Right. Did it help that your wife's an author?
Yes. Oh, well, absolutely. Of course, wife can help in many, many respects, but she can read and criticize and in a nice way, and point out that this passage makes no sense at all, which I'm grateful to hear. Well, first, I'm annoyed because I didn't think that's true. Yeah, it is true. Yes, it is helpful to have somebody who has writing experience and editing experience.
I mean, after the success of the first book, you know, how's the second book going?
Well, it hasn't been released yet.
Oh, it hasn't? Okay, I'm ahead of the curve. Okay.
No, it's coming up December 14th. Just what is it, about 3 weeks from now?
Yeah.
So it's the release date is the 14th. So everybody's just sort of waiting till they can go to their local bookstore or Amazon or Barnes and Noble and order a copy, which any of those people will be happy to provide.
Right. When you sort of you started writing about it and obviously picking not just the idea of the story and the characters and stuff like that, but using your experience to bring in sort of part of it. Did it bring back things that you'd forgotten about?
That's an interesting question. It probably has, yes. For example, in the reflecting pool, I can almost see the reflecting pool, which is right at the basis of the Lincoln Memorial Monument. And I can almost see it from here. And I hadn't been there in a long time. So when I was writing the book early on, I walked over to where one of the opening scenes takes place. And it sort of brought back times that I visited the reflecting pool as a tourist, just or somebody wandering around the city. And yes, it does bring back. And then headshot, a major scene takes place in the Lincoln Memorial itself. And I hadn't been there in years. And of course, this was going on during the pandemic, so I couldn't really travel very much. But I had photographs I'd taken at the Lincoln Memorial years ago. You know, it comes back bit by bit. The mind keeps a lot of these memories, good memories.
Yeah.
They're all good memories.
Yeah, files them away. That's right, in the filing cabinet. You just got to find the right drawer. That's right.
That's right. Yes, exactly.
Okay. You've obviously, you know, you speak a lot of languages, you've been to lots and lots of places. Are you able to bring in some of the foreign places that you've been to in your stories?
Well, the ones that I've written so far, no. At some point, I'd like to do that. I've thought of a story that takes place in Iceland, of all places.
Oh, right. Yeah, nice.
Quite a completely different world, but it's a world that I know well, and I have a scene which, in my head, I haven't written any, where there's a fight at the edge of the volcano Hekla, one of the largest fire volcanoes in the world, and I actually, when I was in Iceland, it erupted, and I visited Hekla by train, by plane and on foot, and so I thought, well, that'd be a cool thing to incorporate, but I haven't written that, and I don't know what the rest of the novel would be about.
Right.
But I might very well do one in which I would involve East Germany. But my books aren't historical books, so they all take place contemporaneously, and so it's a little difficult to incorporate experiences I've had in the many cities I've lived in without going breaking the time zone, so to speak.
Are you still doing your plays, or are you just
constantly? No, I'm not, actually, and I regret that. Sometimes I think, you know, I'd really like to go back and do one. I keep thinking of scenes in a play or events, but I haven't done it. One of these days, if I get tired of writing thriller novels, I might go back, or I might do something else entirely.
Exactly, yeah. Leave it all open for your thing. Well, it's been great chatting to you. It really has, Otho.
Well, it's my pleasure.
But time is getting on, so what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so that you can tell everybody where they can find more about you and, of course, your books.
Okay, well, very good. I'm delighted, and I thank you so much.
Okay, so go ahead.
Okay, well, I was I'm now a thriller writer, a fate I never expected to experience, but it's great fun. I spent over 20 years in the State Department and the U.S. Foreign Service, serving about 10 years in Washington and the rest of the time abroad. I've lived and worked and actually studied in most of the capitals of Europe, but I've also visited Moscow and Tokyo. So I have a lot of experience, and as you say, I speak, or used to speak, a number of languages. I now speak a number of languages very badly. I was a lawyer by training, and was in the Army for a while. I don't think I made a very distinguished military career out of that. But mostly I've been doing foreign service diplomatic work.
Okay.
And now in the last 10, 15 years, writing, which is something that I really love doing. And I live here in Washington, where I've lived most of my life, except when I was abroad.
Okay.
And I the book that is coming out on December 14th is called Headshot, which refers to both photographs of celebrities and a certain type of crime.
Right.
And the book comes out on the 14th of December, and it can be gotten on through Amazon and Barnes & Noble and your local bookstore, which I really commend people to use. I can be found on Facebook, and I have a site on at oeskin.com, which if you want to know about all the plays I've written and other things about me, you are more than welcome to investigate.
Great. Well, Otho, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. It's been great chatting to you. Good luck with this new book, the second book, when it comes out. And I'm sure after that first book, there'll be a lot of people waiting to get it as soon as it comes out. So good luck and thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. My pleasure. There you go. Otho Eskin. O-T-H-O. Otho. O-T-H-O. And then Eskin is E-S-K-I-N. And we've been talking about his new book, Headshot, which follows great after the first book of his, which was The Reflecting Pool, wasn't it? That was it. And great stuff. I mean, and looking at what the reviews are and everything like that, it's going to be a great series. So look out for it. The December the 14th, I think he said, was when the new
that's
book,
right.
Headshot, comes out. Well, that's it. I will be back again tomorrow with a fresh guest. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget.